come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that make me. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Catherine Debney here on Stay On Your Flower, which is coming to you live from the Atheist Kibbutz, deep in the heart of the People's Republic of Moreland. They say two's company, three's a crowd. Do you think that's true? Today we're going to talk about open relationships and non-monogamous relationships, stuff like polyamory, which is getting a much bigger awareness in our community. Perhaps it's just happening now, perhaps it's been going on for a long, long time. Joining me to talk about this today and to inform us all and to shed some light into these dark corners of our emotions and our relationships is Cindy Darnell, sexologist, sex therapist, sex educator, and founder and creator of Pleasure Salon Melbourne. Cindy.
Hello, Catherine.
How many people are you having a relationship with currently?
Oh, currently myself primarily.
Just yourself?
Just myself at the moment. So.
Now, polyamory is a word that only came into my kind of intellectual forest of ideas perhaps 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We've all heard of polygamists. When you think polygamists, mm-hmm. you tend to think Mormons. And polyamory means loving many. Now,
yes.
I read an article and Tilda Swinton
mm-hmm.
is a polyamorous. She has
yeah.
a husband and a boyfriend. Is this a new thing?
Look, I don't know that it's a new thing, but I do think that people talking about it and having very frank conversations about it is what's new about it. There are a lot of arguments, scientific arguments, that suggest that we naturally are not monogamous creatures and that monogamy has been forced onto us by financial institutions, by religions and this sort of thing, that in our essence that we are
not social critique,
monogamous.
Religious oppression and financial necessity.
Yeah.
So I think we need to, when we talk about monogamy, what is monogamy? Does monogamy mean mating with this one person for
yeah.
life?
Basically, the way that I think it's been placed onto us as a society is that it's one man and one woman, or you know, two people together essentially forever, and that you will never ever stray from that union, and that you will only ever have eyes and desire for that one person, which there are people who are capable of doing that, and I think that that's a wonderful and admirable thing, but I think a lot of us tend to recognize that that's not always going to be the case. And that's not to say that humans are not inherently inclined toward pair bonding. We are, I believe we are, but in your lifetime, if you live 70 or 80 years, being attracted to one person, only one person for 70 years can often be a pretty unrealistic expectation to have on yourself. In that lifetime, you might have three or four partners, you might have 20 partners, you might have however many. And that's not to say that the attraction to pair bonding is any less significant, but you might find yourself attracted to more than one person in your lifetime, and that doesn't mean that anything's actually wrong with you. It's actually part of the human condition.
Has monogamy been as successful as it's always been suggested to us?
Well, I think if we look around, or even amongst our own peer groups, and we look at the people that we know that are in relationships, we can see that some of them are still together and some of them aren't. So it's the evidence that walks among us, I think, that is what we need to consider. It's not necessarily about statistics. It's not necessarily about academic research. Open our eyes, look around us and have a look at what's going on. Some relationships are monogamous and they work very well. Some of them are not monogamous. They also work very well. And some of them don't work at all, and people stay together for a whole bunch of other reasons, which is not what we're going to be talking about today. But I think we are often tricked into believing that there is only one way to approach relationships, and I emphasize the word tricked, that we actually have to stop and consider that we do have options, and it's up to us to consider what options are most viable for us, what suits us, what suits our lifestyle, what suits our requirements.
I was shocked to read recently that the nuclear family and monogamy, which is always sold to us as the bedrock of society, is only a really recent thing. It only started to really happen in the late 1800s. That was only then that the man and the woman who had the babies together wanted to live in the house. Together. Before then, there was tribes and castles and convents and communes.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it was all quite different. So this occurred, and then we had the Spanish flu, the First World, the Second World War, and we lost a lot of people and we became very natal. And so we went back to this monogamy idea was much stronger than it had ever been before, and the notion of long-term and nuclear family.
Mm.
And we're now living a lot longer and we know a lot more. So it's time for our relationships to progress, to keep keep up with the fact we no longer have the religious oppression, the social critique, and the financial constraints that we once did. Mm. Now, the kinds of open relationships and non-monogamous relationships, I want to ask, what can you tell us what polyamory is, what an open relationship is, and what a non-monogamous relationship is?
Okay. So as we were talking about earlier, polyamory, the word poly meaning many, and amory coming from amor, the word to love. So some people choose to have what they actively call polyamorous relationships, where you're actually actively having intimate relationships, that it's not just sex, it's actually sharing parts of your life with more than one person. Depending on how one chooses to approach this, you certainly need to ask yourself whether or not you have enough time and energy to be able to dedicate yourself to more than one person, because we know how much time and effort goes into maintaining just one relationship. So maintaining more than one requires a certain amount of self-inquiry that will determine whether or not this is actually going to be a suitable lifestyle for you.
So you're saying having more than one relationship, do you see polyamory not as one relationship but having two relationships at the same time?
Well, this is the thing. It depends on how you approach it. Some people who practice polyamory practice in a situation where they see themselves as a tribe. So there might be four or five of them and they're all in relationship with each other. Some people see themselves as being individuals in relationship with two or three separate people, and those two or three people don't necessarily have anything to do with each other, although they might. It's up to each individual who chooses to say that they identify as polyamorous or that they practice polyamory would identify for themselves what their rules are. There are no rules as such. There's a lot of different ways to practice polyamory, but the main difference that exists between what would be known as polyamory to open relationships, to non-monogamous relationships, and to something like swinging is the context of it actually involving the concept of love and the concept of a committed relationship of some kind.
So if you're a polyamorist, do you definitely have to tell the people that it is there, the full disclosure part of that?
I think in order for any kind of open relationship to work, whether it's a polyamorous relationship, an open relationship, or anything like this, the key to any kind of relationship to a degree is honesty and communication, particularly where other people's well-being is hinged upon decisions that you make. Polyamorous relationships really require a degree of honesty and clarity of communication that is often missing, I think, from regular monogamous relationships, where there's no incentive to necessarily communicate beyond the way you've already done it, because there's no potential threat, or there's certainly not a threat that's discussed. Whereas in an open relationship, once you start opening your relationship, a lot more feelings start coming up and a lot more vulnerabilities have the potential to come up. And processing those involves a certain level of maturity and what I would consider to be a more advanced level of communication that requires a level of honesty and a level of integrity that goes beyond what's often required in monogamous relationships where difficult situations are not discussed openly.
So if a woman has a husband and she also has a lover that the husband doesn't know about, can she call herself a polyamorist?
Look, I would argue not, because getting a bit on the side where your partner doesn't know about it is not part of the definition of what I understand to be polyamory.
Good, that's what I wanted to clear. Okay, so polyamory we've got, open relationships.
Okay, so open relationships are where there are two or more people in a relationship and they choose to have sex with people outside of that relationship, but it's not necessarily anything more than that. It might just be a friendship, a friends with benefits kind of situation. It might just be that they are lovers, but they're not necessarily in an intimate relationship with each other that extends beyond a physical exchange of sex, really. So all of the things that you would assume go along with being in an intimate relationship, that you go to movies together, you go to dinner together, you tell each other your feelings and your thoughts and your problems. In a polyamorous relationship, it would be that way between the partners potentially, whereas in an open relationship, you might have your what they would call the primary partner, who's the main person probably that you live with or you spend more of your time with, and then whoever else is on the side, that they are lovers, but they're not necessarily part of the fold. But still within that, everybody knows what's going on. Everybody knows. Because it's open and it's, again, it's about the clear and open communication.
Okay. So. Non-monogamous relationships.
Okay. So non-monogamous relationships are essentially any variation on those. The thing with starting to open up your relationship is really about looking at How is it going to work for you if it is in fact something that you want to do? And of course, this podcast is not about suggesting that people do it, because it's not for everybody, and forcing yourself or shoehorning yourself into something that really is not going to make you feel good about yourself is not at all an ideal situation. So this is really for looking at considering whether or not an open relationship or a non-monogamous relationship is going to be appropriate for you, is through a series of getting real with, a series of questions to get real with yourself and ask yourself, well, first of all, why am I doing this? Why are we doing this? And how are we going to do it? Because we have the power, we have the choice to make our own rules in any relationship that we go into. We don't have to do it in a prescribed fashion. And I think for a lot of folks, the challenge of open relationships can be, it might be the one of the first times in their life that they actually do really take some of that power and go, wow, I actually can have the kind of relationship I want to have. I don't just have to follow along with what's been prescribed to me. I do have choice and I do have control. And it's about what, at the end of the day, makes me happy, what works for my relationship, what makes my partner happy. And the other thing is, too, that people who practice polyamory or people who practice any kind of open relationships, they don't necessarily even have to have a primary partner. They can just be a person who happens to have several lovers that they may or may not consider to be partners, and they still could call themselves people who practice open relationships or practice polyamory, because they just choose to have lovers that are non-committal, but they identify as being a single person in that too.
This podcast is brought to you by Pushy Women, an all-female speaking event which is part of Melbourne Bike Fest. Come and hear Noni Hazelhurst, Ethel Chopp, Clementine Ford, Emily Zoe Baker, Nellie Thomas, Stella Young, Anna Crean, Jess Maguire, and Catherine Devaney. Share their hilarious, moving, and jaw-dropping stories of life on two wheels. Wednesday, March 14th, Malthouse Theatre, 7 p.m. To buy tickets, go to www.melbournebikefest.com.au/program. You'll find Pushy Women under Satellite Events.
I know two, at least two, possibly three long-term threesomes that have been going for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between polygamy and polyamory?
Well, I guess polygamy is that concept of one or other partner having lots of multiple partners that is somehow sanctioned by rules or sanctioned by religion or whatever. As you said earlier, it's, you know, often in the realm of the Mormons and this kind of thing. This seems to be, my understanding of it is that there's some sort of hierarchy attached to it, and often in that case it's the man who has several female partners for whatever reason, whereas polyamory has nothing to do with gender, and it certainly has nothing to do with a prescribed set of rules. It's about you having the choice of making it up for yourselves as you go along. And even I would sort of go as far as to say that within that relationship it's about you negotiating not necessarily things that are the same for each other, but as long as it's fair, as long as you feel that your needs are being met within the relationship, that maybe your partner wants more freedom than you feel that you need, that's okay. But it's about being able to identify what it is that you need, how you can ask for it, and how also as an effective partner to be a good listener, to really understand what your partner is asking of you and how you can provide that for them as well. And of course, the big thing that comes up for a lot of people who start considering opening their relationships is the responses to threat, what they perceive to be a threat, and these uncomfortable emotions.
Now, before we talk about why people choose polyamory or become polyamorous or realize they are a polyamorist and the coping with emotions, because if you bring this conversation up, the first thing that comes up is how do people cope with jealousy?
Absolutely.
Before we talk about that, I wanted to ask two questions. One is, are people polyamorous or can they just be in a situation polyamorous? And I ask this because in my current relationship, I could not be polyamorous. This is not a polyamorous relationship. But I have been in relationships in the past where I thought that that was quite a viable option.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing. And also, instead of talking about these vague ideals, I think people are really interested in what does this look like?
Yeah.
Like, how does this, so if you could give us an idea of how it looks, rosters, setups, you know, dates,
yeah,
Valentine's Day. Yeah. So those two things. I mean, I know that you're much more flexible about the notions of sexuality than probably most people.
Yeah.
People will probably say, I am straight, but I like girls or boys a little bit, or I am gay, I'm definitely gay, or I'm totally bi. But do you think some people are, in their hearts, at a core, polyamorous?
Yes. Yeah, I do think some people are. I also think that there probably are some people who aren't. But again, it's about that self-inquiry. And I suppose in that, if I've understood you correctly, that question of, you know, what does it look like? What does it mean? How does it operate? In all honesty, I can't categorically say how it should look because for each and every person it's slightly
different.
That's
right. But I think listeners would love to hear how it might look. So if you know of a situation, you might be able to tease that out.
Mm.
So I know of one threesome.
Yeah.
And I didn't know them terribly well, but I knew their daughter very well.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was a couple just living with another woman because I've always had people live at my house. The guy came down and said, oh, wondering if you'd like to come to our anniversary. We've been together for, you know, 10 years. I'm sure you've worked out we're not a regular kind of relationship. Hadn't even dawned on me. A guy and a woman had a child together and there was another woman in the relationship. The guy was intimate with the woman that he had the child with, but not with the other woman, but was emotionally polyamorous with the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the women were together. Basically, one of the women had two lovers, but the other two, and they all maintained. The other one is three guys who've been together for, you know, 20 or 30 years.
Mm. And I think, I mean, sort of socially, from what certainly what I have seen, the practice of polyamory has been much more accepted and incorporated certainly into the lives of gay men, and it's now starting to come into the lives of heterosexual people much more in terms of it being something that's spoken about. I think, you know, people have been having affairs since marriage was invented, I guess. But as we were saying before, having an affair or having something on the side that's a secret is quite different from having an active, conscious, open relationship, because the thing about affairs that often really hurts people is the betrayal.
Yeah.
Often people can actually get over the fact that their partner has found somebody else sexually attractive. It's the not telling them that can often be the big stake through the heart for a lot of people, whereas actively discussing it with your partner is a way of acknowledging that the feelings are shifting in the relationship if you've been together for however long, or even if you know within yourself that this is how you are going to be, that any relationship you enter into on the first or second date, you bring it up and you say, this is how it is for me. If you're going to get involved with me, you need to understand this about my personality. So again, it's about knowing yourself. In terms of ways that you can practice it, I know people who practice polyamory in that they have a primary partner or a one or two, what they would consider even equal primary partners, and then they have other lovers on the side. Things like the Google Calendar has become a very popular tool used within different polyamorous communities, because then that way everybody gets to see who's doing who and when and where, and that way it's a way, I suppose, of keeping everything up front and above board, that everybody knows who's available on which night. Again, this is not the only way to do it. This is just an example of one of the ways that I know of some people who practice that way. Others have their primary partner and then they just have other lovers on the side. They don't actually have full-scale relationships with them, and the degree of information that is divulged is relative to the level of intimacy that goes on with that partner emotionally. So there really is just so many different ways of
doing
it.
How common is it for polyamorous to all live under the same roof?
I think it's becoming more and more common, especially in a place like Melbourne, which is becoming increasingly expensive, that more and more people are starting to understand that conventional relationships, conventional families, that nuclear thing, it puts a lot of financial pressure on people.
It sure does.
And particularly people who may be, you know, single parents and that kind of thing, who, when I say single, I mean that they're not married, but this maybe still have lovers and that kind of thing, they're cohabiting with other people. It's just becoming a more and more frequent occurrence that people are house sharing together. They may or may not end up being lovers. And just through sheer necessity, I think it is becoming a lot more common.
I think, you know, we hear a lot about the rise in the single person household, but the biggest rise in what's being asked of from developers and from architects is actually dual family residences.
Wow.
And, you know, we have, you know, we're a couple, my children live here, and we have a housemate, and I've had a housemate for, you know, almost the entire time from, you know, when I left home, someone who was not involved in the family or the relationship or whatever. But I want that to keep going because I love non-conventional ways of, the conventional doesn't really work for
there's
me.
There's nothing so about that, you that's conventional.
Well, what's, I think that, but when we grew up, like, you know, I'm 43 and growing up, it was quite normal to move out of home and live in share households.
Yeah.
And so the idea of having someone live with you is not unusual. Now, because there is a movement for children to stay at home longer with their parents, and they often, they are skipping that bit of living with other people. I'll be interested to see if polyamory and sharing spaces with multiple
really
lovers is going
to
be as easy. When you repartner, you know, in your 40s or, you know, after you've had children, which is very common, what's interesting to me is, like, we moved in within 5 weeks, and that's really common. When you get to our age, you've done it before, and you're just going to go, well, you know, clearly we're going to be at each other's houses all the time, so why don't we just hop in and see if it works? And then if it doesn't, we can scale down from here.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. Now, what are the benefits of polyamory? What do people get out of it?
I think people who choose to practice open relationships and polyamory, it's a way of being able to say to your partner, if indeed you have one, you know what, I love you, but I need more than this. This is not, it's just not enough. So
that must be very hurtful to hear.
I guess it
can some
be.
People.
For some people, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, if you
yeah.
get into a relationship with someone who says, I'm a polyamorist,
yeah.
this is what I do, you know what to expect.
Yeah.
But if you've been in a long-term relationship and then suddenly somebody says, I need more, that is indicating you're not enough.
It can indicate that, although
that must be how it feels.
It could be, but I think it depends on the way that you interpret that. So this is where, again, the communication skills are fundamental. Actually hearing your partner if you do receive a message like that, unless your partner actively says to you, you're not enough for me, or there is something wrong with you that makes me want to stray, if they say to you, I want to have an open relationship, or I'm interested in exploring an open relationship, that does not necessarily mean that there is anything actually wrong with your relationship. It could mean that, but having the conversation about how to open up in the first place is often the most precarious
thing,
and has to be done with compassion, has to be done very gently, and the trick is really, really listening. It's one thing for your partner to say, I'm interested in exploring open relationships, but if you hear, oh, you don't love me anymore, which is not actually what your partner said, then that's where the communication can start to go awry. So it's really about actually practicing the skill of listening. What is it that your partner is saying? And then breaking it down, working out, how is this going to look for us? Or even asking yourself, is this what I want? I know my partner wants it, but maybe it's not what I want.
Well, another element here is, are polyamorous relationships always sexual? Because I've always considered, after I came across that term, that emotionally I'm very polyamorous.
Mm.
And I always have been. Mm-hmm. And so when I started relationships from the beginning, I've had to say, I'm a boring straight woman, I have a lot of close male friends, and you're just going to have to deal with it because I always have and I always will, and it's just okay.
Yeah.
And it is a deal breaker. And there's been no guy who hasn't been able to cope with that. And they've been right in putting their trust in me because they are close, but I've been up front and also aware too that there's ways of being upfront about it, but there's also ways of being able to carry yourself so you can minimise any potential damage.
Mm.
See, we were listening last night at Hares and Hyenas to Lyndall, who got up and told her amazing story about her book called Biversity.
Sexual Biversity.
It's amazing. Yeah. She was talking about, you know, having her first child, a month after her first child, she found out that her husband also wanted to enjoy men as well.
Mm.
And this extraordinary story, 19 years later, more in love than ever before. You know, I rose to my feet and applauded after it was finished. She was shaking. It was amazing. And she talked about, you know, the hurt and the rejection, but embracing and moving into that. And she was like a real inspiration. And he was there.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps his male partner was there too. Or like, there was a whole bunch of them. But it was such a life-affirming story. The fact was that they still had love, and that's what got them through. And she said, this is not about me surviving this relationship.
Mm.
This is about me embracing it. And she now works in
Sensuality Boutique, I think she said. Yeah.
And, I mean, it was what an extraordinary journey for her. And to set an example of how you can live your life. See, if the only example that we see is straight, white, Christian couples with children and mortgage households, you don't see any other ways. Mm. And I do think that the examples and being open about the way that you live is wonderful for you, because you don't feel that you have to hide anything. I mean, Lyndall brought up the whole suicide, depression, all the, you know, carrying around a secret, feeling the shame. Being open, you can live your life fully and happily. I can't imagine the mental health benefits, the physical health benefits, and just the joy and how much you can live your life,
this is
let
the
alone
thing
the great
that...
example that you can show other people who might go, maybe that would be a better fit for me.
Absolutely. And so hearing stories like Lyndall's, where she talks about how painful it was in the beginning, and she talks about how confronting and challenging it was.
Amazing.
And at no point did it sound like that her husband didn't love her, or that it wasn't about her not being enough. It actually wasn't about her at all.
It was often
when we hear that our partners are dissatisfied with something in the relationship or in their lives, it's easy sometimes to get caught up and think, oh, it's me, I've done this, I've made them feel like that, when actually, maybe, it's not even about me at all. And in Lyndall's situation, it wasn't about
he had
her.
Always
it had
been
nothing to do
it
with
her. He'd always been attracted to men. He wasn't able to share it. He had always, I'm sure, perhaps if this happened in 30 years' time, let's hope a man in Lyndall's husband's position could from the outset say, I think you're adorable and I'm madly in love with you. This is who I am.
Yeah.
This is how I feel. These are the things that I could see could possibly happen, you know, and things I'd be attracted to, and I need you to be on board with that immediately. If that's not something for you, you're gorgeous and can we, you know, still be friends on Facebook?
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, I'm not going to hide this. Mm. But where were the images growing up, the relationships in the kids' books, in the, you know, in the school ground with the parents, in amongst his own family, friends and neighbours, to say, oh yeah, you know them, like that.
Yeah.
Now finally, the big one,
which
always comes up first thing. I said, I'm going to be talking to Cindy about open relationships, non-monogamous relationships and polyamory. And the first word that comes up is jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
Just every single time, jealousy.
Yeah.
How do they cope with the jealousy?
Well, the thing is, in the capacity of the open relationships that I know, some of them do deal with jealousy, some of them don't. So it's not an absolute given that jealousy is always there. It can often be there, certainly in the beginning when you're navigating your way through. I mean, and if we look at, again, the human life and the way that we operate, there are lots of situations that can cause jealousy for us. This is only one. So I think it is a little bit hyper-oriented to consider that this is the only situation where jealousy occurs for humans.
That's
so,
a really good point. You know, I wish I had that car. Yeah, I wish I had that body. No. I wish my kids were like that. I wish I had that job. I wish I, you know,
yeah, so
had
jealousy is around us in a lot of different situations. This is just one of them. So I think we need to get it into perspective around that in the first place. The other thing behind it is that it's really important to ask yourself, well, what is actually going on behind this jealousy? So the jealousy comes up, and how does it manifest? If it makes you an aggressive asshole that you want to start punching things, that's not cool, and that really needs to be addressed. But if the jealousy is just sitting with you, it's about actually looking at, well, what is it that you're jealous about and what's going on underneath it? You know, is there some sort of fear involved? If there is, what are you afraid of? And voice that. Sit with your partner and say to them, I'm feeling scared, and I'm scared that I'm not enough for you, or I'm scared that this means the end, or whatever it is. It might be a valid fear. It might be completely irrational and something that's not at all connected, because your mind is racing with this idea of, oh, I've heard this means that they don't love me anymore. And in many cases, that's not what it means at all. It's about listening to your partner. So that's one thing. Is that, you know, is there some sort of insecurity behind it? Is there a sense of inferiority behind it? The reasons that jealousy come up are vast and varied and really specific to individuals. And again, it can be about what's going on in your relationship. If your relationship is really rocky and then your partner says, let's consider an open relationship, that's a very different situation from a relationship that's really solid and has already got a fantastic communication foundation when then that topic comes up. So there's a lot of different situations that will alter the way that somebody responds to hearing that information, and then how they process what could be jealousy, what could be fear, what could be insecurity, what could be anxiety, or what could be a genuine response to, uh-oh, my relationship's in trouble. And it could be that too.
It's interesting. One of the things that
I've always thought is...
I don't understand why adults don't have their own bedroom. Adults in relationships.
Yeah.
And people say, well, you know, because you... Yeah, it's like people are all crazy about, well, the kids have got to have their own mm-hmm. bedrooms. Like, well, what about the grown-ups? They go, well, no, but they've got to because they have sex. Like, hang on. You don't, A, have to have sex in a bed. Plenty of people I know have been sharing a bed, haven't had sex for 20 years. And the ones that are not living under the same roof are having heaps of yeah. sex. But if you bring that up as something, even the thought that of having separate bedrooms, we wouldn't want to have, and women have said, almost all the women I know say, I would love a separate bedroom, mm-hmm. but he would feel rejected.
Yeah.
It's like, but what about what you want? Is there not a place where you can explain that? And I think what interests me about polyamorous and non-conventional relationships is it does make people question and work a little harder and not go to yeah, the default setting.
Absolutely.
So if you just are in a kind of a white, straight, mm-hmm. hetero, mortgaged, breeding couple, you just go along with it. But when you throw in another
yeah.
element, you move out of your auxiliary brain into a much more functioning brain where every single thing that comes up, whether it's birthday, Christmas, sickness, sex, money, you have to reassess it. And instead of just going to the default, you have to find something that works for you.
Yep.
Now, three quick questions.
Mm-hmm.
One, with the move to same-sex marriage, do you think we'll ever see in Australia that it will be legal for more than two people to marry?
I don't think so, but then I also think that marriage is a conventional institution anyway. I think it's up to us to redefine what relationships are. And if you want to be married, if you want to have commitment ceremonies and celebration ceremonies, why not? Whether or not there's government recognition behind it, I suppose, is up to the individuals involved, whether or not that's important to
Second
them.
Second question. So. We've got an atheist, unmarried, barren Prime Minister at the moment. We might be by the time this podcast goes to air, but we do now. Do you think we'll ever have a polyamorous Prime Minister?
Why not?
I think so. Now, a third and last question, what are we talking about next week?
Next week, we are talking about sex toys and masturbation.
Fantastic. Cindy Darnell with me. She's trying to create world peace one orgasm at a time, and she's doing a cracking job. Join us next week here on Stay On Your Flower, deep in the heart of the People's Republic of Moreland, coming out of the atheist kibbutz. I'm Catherine Devaney. Thanks for joining us.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that make me. Let's talk about sex.
Audio production by Anthony Artman. Artsystems@gmail.com.